The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Internationals, that special time. And on today's Top Pod, we have the latest from the exciting new World Cup qualifying campaign. There's Scotland, Wales, the Ireland, and then England. Once again, as convincing playing abroad as Brian Blessed in a Wigan full season. That's not all. There's a fresh disaster for French Jacques Tati-esque comedy genius Raymond Domenech, with a defeat to Austria that left all of France seeing stars. And there's Brazil, as we ask, did Dunga's career survive their clash with Chile? All that plus your posts and the latest from Shark Jumping Premier League on the exciting job opportunities at Newcastle and West Ham. All that in today's Football Weekly. Well, welcome on board, everybody. Another Top Pod of cast today, standing by to pan through a weekend's worth of international silt for a few choice football nuggets. Barry Glendinning here with me.
Hello, James.
Hi, Barry. Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Welcome back to you, Paul. And welcome back, Fernando Duarte.
Hi there, guys.
Yeah, hello to you too, Fernando. How are you this morning?
I'm naked.
All right, then. All right, then. Well, it's been an emotional weekend for us all, I would imagine. Starting off with that incredible England game in Barcelona against Andorra. Villa support group blogging in saying he wants us to avoid all the usual England cliches and salute the plucky underdogs for their performance. So well done, England, for a victory there. Props too to FootVantage06, who correctly predicted the 2-0 scoreline, I think 2 days before the game. He says 2-0 to England, 2-0 to England against Andorra. And he also goes on to say it's going to be 0-0 with Croatia on Wednesday. Capello will say job done. Well, okay, was it job done against Andorra? Barry?
Well, it was, in so much as they got 3 points and their victory was far from convincing. And I don't think the Croatians will be too worried by anything they see when they watch the DVD of the game. England were absolutely dismal in the first half. Joe Cole came on, scored the two goals, and then Andorra like never looked like scoring at all.
I mean, England would put down a lot of the problems they had in the game to the fact that you need two teams to play football. But I guess winning the game was one part of it. The other part of what everyone was looking for from this game was getting England back on track, building morale, looking like we got, or they've got something of a project. From that point of view, Paul, were you impressed?
I wouldn't say I was impressed, no. But I don't think that's the way he'll go to play in Croatia anyway. I mean, they started off with a straight 4-4-2 with Downing and who was on the right again?
On the right was Walcott.
Sorry, I fell asleep halfway through the match.
Yeah, Walcott. And,
Walcott, yeah. Yeah. Who is fast? Downing isn't fast and didn't produce anything. But there's no way he's going to play like that in Croatia. He's not, neither of those two probably will play. He'll go for a much cagier thing. I think Joe Cole will start. And the sort of craft that himself and Rooney showed to create the second goal is how they'll try to open up Croatia, you imagine.
Well, our top chum, Kevin McCarra, was actually at the game, the lucky, lucky man, in Barcelona. And he joins us now on the phone from said city now. Kevin, are you there?
Yeah, hi, James.
Hi, Kevin. Listen, first off, briefly on the Andorra game, Capello looking very irate, even with two-goal hero Joe Cole at the end of Saturday's match. What was the mood like afterwards? Did Capello seem satisfied?
Yes, I mean, I think the anger had gone by the time we spoke to him, and a suggestion of some sort of punishment will be meted out to Cole in future is not hasn't been demonstrated. I mean, he was also equally annoyed with Wayne Rooney, who I don't think will be dropped. But I think you saw a difference in a competitive match. I don't recall him being that animated in the friendlies. And his command of vernacular English seems to be coming on quite nicely as well, judging by the lip reading attempts.
What did he say, Kevin?
I think he was cursing at the players, wasn't he?
All right.
But, yeah, I think he seemed to be cursing in English, so I thought that was quite good.
Right. Were you in any way impressed by what happened on Saturday? Not the fact they got the victory, but did you see any signs of progress from England?
No, I didn't. I saw what I expected Capello, a kind of a certain shrewdness. Before kick-off, I couldn't see why Julian Lescott was playing. In my view, Matthew Upson's a better centre-half, and people with Sports Everton tell me they haven't been too taken by Lescott's form recently. But go to the books and you find that Lescott scored 10 goals last season for Everton and makes a difference for himself when he goes forward at set pieces. Sure enough, he was there, he got in the roads and the ball fell nicely to Cole for a goal. So what's I'm thinking, I think Capello plans on that kind of scale. He's not trying to dazzle you, he's just trying to get the job done. And that's certainly given him great success as a manager with four clubs.
Do you think that Lescott will start against Croatia? And if so, if he's in for his set-piece prowess, will Beckham also start?
I think he's in for a set piece prowess against Andorra because he wasn't required in defence. They had one forward who wasn't going to cause any harm. In fact, small teams often defend, but Andorra are the only ones I can think of who really, really have no intention of scoring and hardly an attempt. But no, I mean, Lescott's situation looks different with regard to Croatia. I think defending will be required. And if Capello agrees with the rest of us, Upson is superior in that way, then I think Upson must play if Ferdinand's back does rule him out.
Mm. Kevin, final thing.
Yeah.
Your feelings on Scotland's result?
I wasn't surprised. I think Macedonia, Scotland probably much more muchness. And Scotland would win at Hampden and they could easily win in Scotland. So it disappointed me, but it didn't amaze me, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah. Okay. Kevin, listen, have a super time in Zagreb, and we'll speak to you after that.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Kevin McCarra there. We'll be hearing a little bit more about the Croatian side that awaits England on Wednesday with Jonathan Wilson later on in this pod. But before that, let's move on to the rest of the home nations and other miscellaneous international results right after this. Kevin McCarra was just mentioning Scotland there, a 1-0 defeat for them in Skopje, which means that George Burley and his injury-hit team still haven't won a game. What is that, four matches now for Burley? And they didn't look good. I mean, it was very, very hot, Barry, but they didn't look good, Scotland.
No, they didn't. Burley has set out to make them difficult to beat, and they're not difficult to beat. All the evidence would suggest that they're quite easy to beat. They don't score. I don't think they've scored at all under Burley's admittedly short tenure. But it was horribly hot in Skopje. But apparently the Scots only arrived the day before the game, which meant they didn't have any time to acclimatise to the heat. And you'd have to question the wisdom of those logistics. Perhaps they should have got there a couple of days earlier.
They also set out quite negatively against a team that plays with only three at the back. I thought they could have afforded to take the initiative and put them on the back foot, weak as it was. But instead, they conceded a goal early on. In fairness, the free kick that led to the goal should never have been a free kick. It was a bad decision.
They also had a shout for a penalty, they felt, but a 1-0 defeat anyway. And next up, they are away to Iceland, who had a 2-2 draw with Norway. Are we already at the point in which George Burley's tenure with the Scottish team is beginning to look?
Well, if they don't beat Iceland, you'd have to say their chances of qualifying for South Africa in 2010 are pretty much done and dusted. They won't qualify. I mean, I suspect they won't qualify even if they do beat Iceland. Fans won't be happy if they don't at least put in a good performance. But Iceland are no good and they should be able to beat them.
Yeah, I mean, Holland will run away with that group, you imagine, and the other teams, and we'll all take points off each other. So there's still plenty of scope for Scotland to finish second.
Indeed, so nine European groups, four of the nine second-place teams will go through, eight of those nine having gone into playoffs to determine that. Four.
It's such a calm down for Scotland, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
When you think, almost qualifying for Euro 2008.
Absolutely. 2 years ago, they were beating France in Paris. Yeah. And
twice.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyone can beat France, though.
Yeah, indeed so. Well, we'll talk more about the French in a second or two. And Northern Ireland, 2-1 defeat to Slovakia and Bratislava. Martin Skrtel opening the scoring for the Slovaks.
And David Healy not scoring.
Well, yeah. Very unfortunate.
Weird.
Northern Ireland not off to the best of starts then.
But they've the Czech Republic at home on Wednesday. And the only thing Northern Ireland really have going for them is Fortress Windsor Park, which is a very difficult place for teams to get a result. But I can't see them beating Czech Republic at all. But,
really? Well, your double came in last...
I tipped Slovakia, Macedonia. I mean, it was, a 3-1 double, but I didn't have a bet myself, unfortunately. But they weren't surprising results.
No. Okay. Wales did get a victory against the might of Bertie Vogt's Azerbaijan. Although Jason Kumas missed a penalty, was also booked, picked up an injury and now will miss their next match, which is against Russia. John Toshak calling it the worst injury crisis in his 30 years of management.
Well, Toshak, I think, suspects that Kumas may have picked up the yellow card deliberately because Kumas's dedication to the Welsh cause has often been called into question. I think he hasn't played an away match in about 3 or 4 years or something, but he is genuinely injured. He had to get painkilling injections before the game last Saturday. Missed the penalty. Wales made very heavy weather of beating a not very good Azerbaijan side. Mm. But that young kid who came on and scored Volks.
That young kid, in fairness, they're all young kids. That's basically a Welsh under 21 side. You know, you can imagine if the injuries get worse, they're going to end up putting out a lot of 14-year-olds.
Mm. That'd be interesting. In the group, Germany taking on Liechtenstein. As we all know, there are no easy games these days in international football, and it's very difficult to play these small nations who just get nine men behind the ball. But Germany managed a 6-0 victory there. Well done, the Germans. Big win for Ireland, hey? 2-1 away, kind of nominally. It was actually in Germany against Georgia. Mainz was the town which hosted this game. A solid performance from the Irish?
Solid, for the most part. I mean, there was Trapattoni's first competitive game in charge, and they were noticeably more organised, and they had a definite shape to them. And he was, you talk about Capello being animated, Trapattoni bounces up and down for the entire 90 minutes. It's brilliant to see. In fact, he does that in training even. He's a very hands-on...
the airplane movies.
And in press conferences. Apparently he nearly knocked over his interpreter in the middle of a press conference.
Well, he might as well, because he doesn't use her. The interpreter is sitting beside him, and he rants away in English and German and Italian, a strange mixture of all three, and conveying no message whatsoever other than enthusiasm.
Hmm. Which is great. An important message.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's great. But he does that on the sideline anyway.
Right.
And... But there were still signs. It started off very well, quite positively, took an early lead. But then Ireland's the bane of Ireland's qualifiers over the last few years has been conceding late goals. And they got very jittery in the second half. And it looked like they were retreating further and further backwards. And it looked like an equaliser could be on the cards, even though we were manifestly superior to them in the first half. And then Glenn Whelan, who is Trapattoni's main man, he admits he never heard of him before coming to Ireland, but he's probably the first name on Trapattoni's team sheet. He is the water carrier par excellence, but he found the net with a 40-yard screamer to ease Ireland's pain. With a large helping hand from the goalkeeper, who just waved
the Georgian
at
goalkeeper
was passing into the net,
was awful. He looked like he'd never actually played football before, and you know we should have beaten them by more. But if it hadn't been for his intervention, we could have only got a point or were still lost,
and still conceded a goal in the last minute. Despite that, why they're still so nervous is baffling.
Paul, it's strange that Glenn Whelan is first choice for Ireland, but he's not first choice for Stoke, because two Irishmen, Liam Lawrence and Rory Delap, are in the Stoke midfield ahead of him. Do you find that strange?
Well, no, Liam Lawrence, you wouldn't. He plays out wide, and I don't think he's better than either Aidan McGeady or Stephen Hunt, even. For Ireland, so I wouldn't have him in the start. And Rory Delap can throw the ball very far. In fact, he once scored for Ireland from a throw-in.
Can you do that?
It wasn't allowed, but it was brilliant to see it.
Very interesting.
I think you should be allowed. I think if you could.
Well, no, then you just hire specialist quarterbacks.
I think it was one of our listeners wrote on the blog recently that Delap, the reason he's able to throw it so far is he actually throws it one-handed.
Yes.
So one hand is just resting on the ball. The other hand does all the work.
That helps because it actually gets behind to push, does it?
Yeah. I presume
John Terry
yeah.
might want to check that technique out. He managed to get it all of, 6 inches? And that was backwards, I think. The other day.
He's got to be watching his step first. Yes.
Now, elsewhere in the group, it is a tough-looking group, you had Italy going to Cyprus. And the current boom period in Cypriot football are continuing as they ran Italy ragged. Italy scored an early goal with Antonio Di Natale, and then a very, very, very late goal to get all 3 points. But my word, it was a bit of a robbery. Even Lippi talking about how lucky they'd been. The Italians were absolutely shocking at the back. To be fair to them, they did have two early injuries with Gamberini going off, and then Grosso as well with broken ribs. So there were one or two extenuating circumstances, but they looked really, really poor at the back, Parry.
Well, I saw that Buffon got man of the match, which would suggest they were really under the cosh.
Oh, they had,
and he said afterwards that the only thing we can take from this game is 3 points. The rest we just have to forget about.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, the Italian papers today are now firmly on the idea that Buffon is, in fact, even better than Dino's off. I think, to be fair, if anyone deserved the victory, it was the Cypriots, who must have been absolutely sickened when Di Natale volleyed in at what was a very fine winner in injury time. It is also worth pointing out that this is nothing new for Italy. They always perform badly in their first qualifier because August, September, they played maybe one game. You know, they gear up their training to be fit much later on in the season. So, for example, Paul, when Ireland face the Italians, it'll be next April, you'd expect these years to be a much more cohesive bunch. Fernando, I think you were about to make that same point.
Yeah, it's Italy. It's typical Italy. Yeah. I've never seen them actually doing anything spectacular in qualifying groups.
They will, but not at this time of year.
Yeah, but people say, Germany, Italy's the, you know, the most deceitful laggard in the world, isn't it?
Mm.
You don't give them like a chance that they come up creeping and do stuff.
The injury crisis for Italy has deepened when Gennaro Gattuso was playing in a friendly on Sunday and missed the side of the pitch and tumbled into a dugout and sustained multiple fractures to his left hand and wrist.
Speaking about Gattuso, actually, that's who Trapattoni compared Glenn Whelan to over
really?
The weekend. He said he is the new Gattuso.
Yeah. Well, Gattuso came on in the second half.
Someone tell Tony Pulis.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Of course, Stoke aren't into that kind of gritty physical kind of football, so that's why he's not getting the team. Wednesday, Georgia will be visiting Italy in Udine, which is Di Natale's the city where he plays his club football, so look for him to shine there. Well, Ireland will be away to Montenegro, who drew 2-2 with Bulgaria on Saturday. A good result there for Montenegro, a country of just 600,000.
Yeah, you are correct. 600,000. Jonathan Wilson wrote an article about Montenegro.
That Jonathan Wilson.
Last week, our resident expert. And I mean, they're 143rd in the world, but he pointed out that's because they're new, not because they're rubbish. So, you know, it would be unwise to be, fooled by their lowly ranking. He says they'll let in goals, but they will score goals. They've a sort of a three up front. Mirko Vucinic, who I presume you're familiar with his work.
Vucinic,
sorry.
Yeah,
I can't read my own writing here. Roma's, Fiorentina's Stefan Jovetic, an 18-year-old.
One of the top young European players, they say. Well, plenty of other interesting groups out there in the wide world of football. So let's move on and get some other miscellaneous results right after this.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Now, beyond the European borders, although we'll be talking about France in a bit, South America, quite a result for Brazil late on Sunday. Brazil going into their match away to Chile in Santiago in sixth place out of even a playoff for the next World Cup. But a 3-0 win, Fernando Duarte, has put them up into second place now in the group. Dunga safe?
Well, so far so good. I mean, apparently, the word going around that he needed to beat Chile, otherwise the captain would walk the plank, basically.
Right.
And the team before the game said, oh, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to win this for Dunga. So they showed a lot of passion, a lot of heart to beat Chile. But again, it was very disorganized. The midfield was inexistent. I think it was much more due to what the forwards could do, like Robinho and Fabiano, to anything else.
How was Robinho?
Well, you could see he was missing a bit of action, but he was amazing. He was running all over the place. He gave passes. He scored a screamer. And, I think City people, you know, the City fans should expect him to be at least getting, you know, excited for the season.
Fernando, Dunga's been criticised for, you know, his Brazil's lack of flair. Was there any flair on show last night?
Just up front. You know, with the strike. Still, Fabiano's second goal, for example, the third, he actually wrestled the ball away from the defender inside the box to score.
Well, shocking defending, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't that kind of like amazing carnival samba thing. I'm one of those guys saying that perhaps this is people are too much, too rigorous when they demand this kind of exhibitions. But if Brazil at least shows some kind of organization, it would be better. Because this kind of performance wouldn't work against Paraguay or Argentina, for example. And having said that, Paraguay, well, drew in Buenos Aires on Saturday, and actually, you know, they lead the group.
Yeah, indeed, a 1-1 draw away to Argentina. Very impressive from them. Wednesday, we'll see Brazil take on Bolivia. Are you home or away for that one, Fernando?
Home. It's in Rio, this match.
Oh, nice one. Yeah. Tense atmosphere coming into this last game, because you mentioned the expectations. The Brazilian president, Lula, weighing in and comparing Brazil's performance to that of the Argentines, which aroused the wrath of interim Brazil goalkeeper Julio Cesar, who said if he likes it so much, why doesn't he go and live in Argentina, Brazil president?
Yes. And then Julio Cesar was made to apologise, you know. the Brazilian FA told him to apologize. The government and the FA, they need to be together for the World Cup thing.
Ah, yes.
So immediately the suits at the FA said, oh, please, can you apologize?
How are preparations going for the World Cup bid? Have you been given the World Cup or not? It's 2014.
It's
going to
be in Brazil. I mean, yeah. There was a report recently saying that perhaps there is already some kind of delay, that things should be further in terms of preparations. I don't remember who exactly did this report. I just heard wind of it. The government saying, no, everything is all right. Their face saying everything is fine as well.
Right.
So, but I don't reckon they would say, oh, yes, we're really doomed. No.
Yeah. Right,
we have to wait and see a bit.
Mexico, hey? Sven-Göran Eriksson. 2-2 with Mexico. And there's two wins, by the way.
All right, I have no idea.
Top of the CONCACAF zone of World Cup qualifying. A 3-0 win over Jamaica.
Well, I'm happy for Sven, such a nice guy.
Too.
I'm happy for the Mexicans, but come on, the CONCACAF qualifies.
Yeah.
You know, if the podcast people put a team together, we could have a chance of getting a playoff spot there. Come
you
on.
Both know that's not true.
You didn't see James taking penalties.
Is there a rubbish group? I mean,
yeah.
I would love to see Mexico beating people international, like, oh, yeah, they beat Croatia, etc.
Right.
CONCACAF as a parameter, I don't buy that. Sorry.
You can only beat the teams they put in front of you, as they say. Now, Africa, because the African qualifying, the thing is that World Cup qualifying also counts for the next Cup of Nations.
Yeah, which is particularly interesting in the case of South Africa, because at the moment we're at stage two of the qualifying process, and the winners and runners-up of each group will go into another group. And the winners of that group will qualify for the World Cup. And
the losers go into the UEFA Cup, is that right?
No, they'll be in the African Nations Cup.
Right.
But South Africa, if they get into that final group stage, they, of course, don't need to qualify for the World Cup. So if they are in that group, it will be very confusing, because there will actually be two tables within that group, one qualifying for the World Cup, in which South Africa's results aren't taken into account,
right,
and one qualifying for the Nations Cup.
Boy, that would be confusing.
Now, the good news for people who like things simple is that South Africa don't even look like making it into stage three. Because they were beaten by Nigeria at home at the weekend. No disgrace in that. Nigeria, obviously, a good team. But that leaves them well off the pace in the group, because they've previously fell to defeat to Sierra Leone, which is disgraceful, and also drew with them 0-0 at home. So they have to win their last match to have any chance of progressing.
Well, interesting. Meanwhile, Ghana losing in Libya, which is a blow to them, as was the fact that Michael Essien picked up an injury to his knee, the entity or extent of which we are still not sure of, but could prove a major spanner in Chelsea's works, of course. Very good. More international stuff coming up on Wednesday. But in the meantime, let's move on to one or two posts. Paul, since you're obviously in such fine form, tell us about the French reaction to their collapse in Vienna. They're not the first ever to collapse in Vienna, are they,
Barry? No, they're not.
No. But they went down 3-1.
Bon nuit Vienna,
to the Austrians. Did
they say that? Bon nuit Vienna, something like this?
I'm sure they did. What did they say, Paul?
Well, the headline on L'Équipe this morning is things must change and fast. And then inside the pages, they just say Dominic has lost the plot, everyone could have told them a long time ago.
Well, yeah, indeed. Why on earth did they keep him? And why are they surprised now?
Well, there's a lot of politics involved. Sort of the popular choice for manager after the Euro 2008 debacle, and even before that probably, would have been somebody from the 1998 generation, someone like Deschamps, or I'd go for Laurent Blanc, because he plays a nice attacking, ambitious style of football, as he has done with Bordeaux since he's taken over there. But they stuck with him basically because the Federation are fearful of introducing characters like that into it, because they're very independent and they won't like the bureaucrats being involved to the extent that they are. So Dominic was given, basically they said that after three competitive games, regime would be up for review again. They gave him a very modest target of 5 points to get from those three games. And it looks like he won't even achieve that now after the ridiculous defeat to Austria.
Well, Austria, who couldn't score. I mean, they really could not score a goal in the Euro 2008. Finally, got three.
They got three. France defended absolutely abysmally. Now, all of that can't be blamed for Dominic, although a lot of people are blaming Dominic. All three goals came more or less from set pieces. And that France under Dominic have been particularly bad at set pieces. Now, he said in the past that he doesn't even bother working on defending set pieces because he considers that top professionals should know how to do it. Just a case of picking your men up. How hard can it be? But then ahead of this game, because he knew that was Austria's only strength was set pieces, he did. And now they're saying that he worked them to death and he concentrated on them so much that he instilled fear and paranoia in them, which is a trademark of Dominic. His team do play with fear and paranoia. And everything about the French setup, from the way they lock themselves away in hotels and everything, and is paranoid. They're just so negative, so fearful under Dominic. I mean, he just has to go. I mean,
were there any ill-advised post-match proposals of marriage this time heat off himself?
No, we still don't know how she responded to that. We know that she was absolutely furious because she's actually a reasonably serious journalist, and she didn't like him being so flippant after, well, if a marriage proposal can be considered flippant, but it can in the context of when everyone wanted to know why the team had performed so badly, he changed the subject.
Now, I tell you what, let's move on again. Let's get one or two posts from listeners. Lots of people posting in on the whole subject of the wave of foreign money coming into the Premier League and obviously the Abu Dhabi Royal Family and that at Man City. FootVantage 06, Capo Cannon. Complaining about the surreal nature of it all. But post of the week, I think, has to come from Mardi Porn in Birmingham, who talks about the tsunami emanating from Eastlands. He says, I'm not sure whether normal non-billionaire people actually grasp the amount of money involved. That's us he's talking about, I think. If we packed, says Mardi Porn, metre-square boxes with £1 million worth of notes each, yeah, and placed them end-to-end, Bill Kenwright's fortune wouldn't probably reach the end of his drive. I'm guessing it's not too long. Randy Lerner's fortune would stretch twice round a running track. That's a lot of money. Roman Abramovich's fortune would stretch for 7 miles of metre-square boxes packed with £1 million each. Okay, good. That really is a lot of money, but of course it all pales into insignificance when compared to Man City's Abu Dhabi connection. Their fortune would stretch 350 miles all the way up the M1 to Leeds and back again.
It's a poor image because I think we all know that what they do is that they'd build upwards because they're that type of people. They'd like everyone to see it.
That's in Dubai,
even up in space.
Abu Dhabi is supposedly more conservative, but you know they're now getting into football.
Well, I tell you what, as non-billionaire people, do we now grasp the amount of money involved? It's humongous, Mardi Porn goes on to make the serious point that the lifeblood of any sport is competition. Without it, interest will start to die. Sepp Blatter, instead of wittering on foolishly about poor, unfortunate players who unwittingly slave themselves, etc., should be lobbying the EU for some kind of protected status for football or salary caps or something like that. Moving quickly on. West Ham manager Jeff Seater, based on the current candidates for the West Ham manager's job, Paolo Di Canio and Slaven Bilic, who else is on the list, asked Jeff Seater. Prince Harry, Max Mosley, Chortle. What is the latest on the West Ham managerial race, Barry?
There was a bit of a complaint today by the Croatians, isn't it? They were saying that England were playing dirty games to distract Bilic ahead of the game. The entire time of the West Ham interest was made to destabilise him, etc.
Mm-hmm. I can see why they would think that, and they're, you know, probably not too wide of the mark, but Bilic has laughed it off. Apparently he's interested in the job and they're interested in giving it to him or Donadoni or Zola.
Mm.
So they've been conducting interviews. They've interviewed Donadoni and Zola. Apparently Zola gave a very good interview.
Mm.
And I'd say West Ham fans would love to see him at their club. But
It's interesting, this business with Zola, because there he is, shining in the interview with West Ham, as apparently did Roberto Donadoni, who's got rather more experience of working in that kind of position. Zola also one of the hot favourites to take over St James's Park with Newcastle on account of the fact that he's close friends with Dennis Wise.
I'm surprised that somebody who is apparently as nice as Zola, Gianfranco Zola, is friends with somebody as not nice as Dennis Wise. But do you think he would make a good manager? Like, he has no experience whatsoever.
All the reports at the moment are saying Zola is Italy's under-21 manager. He isn't. Pierluigi Casiraghi is Italy's under-21 manager. And Zola sometimes turns up and kind of mills around at training and stuff, and he sits next to him on the bench and that. But training is set out by Casiraghi. Casiraghi does the team selection. And Zola basically, you know, wanders around a lot and smiles. I mean, I might be doing the guy down. He might do an enormous amount of backroom work, but I don't think so.
Well, up in the northeast, I mean, Roy Keane and Gareth Southgate didn't have any experience as managers. They're doing reasonable jobs.
That is true.
Personally, I'd like the Newcastle job to go to Tomori Ketsbaya. who's got Famagusta into the Champions League, which is an amazing achievement, and is himself a Newcastle legend, of course. And the face-off between himself and Dennis Wise could be hilarious.
Indeed so. Interestingly, among the hot favourites to take over from Kevin Keegan at Newcastle is Kevin Keegan. That's if Indian businessman Anil Ambani buys out the Magpies, because apparently he's got Kevin standing by to sweep in and rescue the situation again.
Only at Newcastle could an outgoing manager be replaced by himself.
It's become a bit like EastEnders, isn't it? I mean, it's like this kind of really bad soap opera, horrible soap opera or something like that.
Indeed so. Well, to find out a little bit more about whether Bilic would consider leaving Croatia, and indeed to talk a little bit more about that big game, Croatia-England on Wednesday, let's now join, to finish off today's pod, Jonathan Wilson there in Zagreb. Jonathan.
James.
How are you?
I'm very, very well, thank you.
First up, Slaven Bilic, West Ham, do you reckon any chance?
Very small chance, I think. I mean, I spoke to him last Thursday and he's pretty categorical about saying no. I mean, it wasn't I have no intention of not being with Croatia at the World Cup. It was, I will be with Croatia at the World Cup in 2010.
Right.
I think his motivation, he comes from a fairly wealthy background anyway. I think money really doesn't excite him that much. He's a very patriotic man. His father was quite an important Croatian nationalist dissident, organised various demonstrations at university in Tito's Yugoslavia, campaigning for the greater autonomy for Croatia. So I think for him to walk out on Croatia would have to be something pretty major, and it'd probably have to be a falling out with the Croatian Federation rather than somebody kind of dangling a particularly juicy carrot for him. I mean, I guess maybe if, you know, Liverpool or Manchester United or somebody, but frankly not West Ham.
Right, interesting. Now, he's got a fine-looking Croatia side lined up for Wednesday. They had a good result in their opening qualifier this weekend.
Yeah, I was at that game and they beat Kazakhstan 3-0. And it was one of those 3-0s that it could have been anything. It could have been 7, 8, 9. They scored early, got another goal kind of after 35 minutes. A lovely goal, actually, Modric's second goal. And then they just took the foot off the gas. I mean, it was a perfect preparation for them that they kind of could coast through the second half, prepare themselves for Wednesday. Got a third goal 10 minutes from time from Mladen Petric, which I guess is the only real issue for Bilic, is who's he play up front with, a bit to Olic. I mean, Olic's place, I don't think he was ever really in doubt, but he's been criticised quite a lot. He's kind of not technically the best player. He works very hard, his running's very good, but you know, he's certainly no Eduardo. And he's actually quite a good foil for Eduardo, I think. So there's a suggestion that he might be left out, but he had an excellent game on Saturday. I mean, missed a handful of chances, but his movement was great. His layoff that created the second goal, his dummy that led to the third. So I think his place is cemented. Then the question is, will it be Krasnic or will it be Petric playing up front with him? Krasnic started on Saturday, didn't have the best game. Petric came on, looked very lively. But, you know, there's a different thing coming off the bench against a demoralised side to starting against them. So I think that's the only real issue for Bilic in terms of selection.
No Eduardo, no Nico Kranjčar this time around. Any glimmers of hope for anybody out there who might be supporting England on Wednesday?
No, I mean, to be honest, the loss of Kranjčar has almost been a bonus for them, because the player they brought in, and that's not to say anything against Kranjčar, because I think he's a lovely player, but the player they brought in on the left, Ivan Rakitic, who's only 20, plays for Schalke. He's had a great start of the season in Germany. He was brilliant on Saturday. He's got, he runs in a very strange way. You know how Norman Whiteside had that slightly strange way of running, where he kept his hips very square? Rakitic reminded me slightly of him, a very strange kind of loping way of running. But, great player, great technical ability. And the thing for Croatia now is that three years ago they thought Kranjčar was going to be the creator hub of their team for the foreseeable future. Modric then comes in and supplants him. And now the thought is, so actually maybe Rakitic is better than Modric. He's certainly bigger. He's 6'1". He's got a bit more physique about him. I mean, I think Modric is a phenomenal player. I'd be amazed if he gets to that level. But he's been talked about in the same bracket.
Excellent. Listen, Jonathan, that's a fantastic little preview there of the Croatia side that awaits us on Wednesday. Many, many thanks for that.
And
we look forward to speaking to you afterwards.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Cheers, Jonathan. Barry, do you want to finish off with a prediction?
I have a feeling England will get a result. I don't think they'll win. But going by what Jonathan says, I get the impression he fully expects Croatia to win quite easily.
Mm. Well, 2-0 last time to Croatia with Wayne Rooney leaving the field, flicking two fingers at the fans and missing, probably. But what do you think this time, Paul Doyle?
I'll go for a Croatia win with David James to be integral to that.
Right, okay. Fernando?
The obvious result would be Croatia actually beating England. But
yes.
I don't know. I think that Wayne Rooney will do something if he actually plays. It's time he did something.
Last October, wasn't it? The last time he scored? Just five goals since Euro 2004?
Well, he did create that second goal on against Andorra on Saturday. But Joe Cole and Wayne Rooney are the only two players in the English squad who could have produced a goal like that.
Hmm.
So he's worth having on the pitch for that, precisely that sort of moment.
Fair point. A fair point. And with that, we'll shut up shop until Thursday, when we'll be rounding up a lot of this stuff and also moving onto all the club football that will be roaring back into view for the weekend. So in the meantime, many, many thanks for Fernando Duarte for coming in.
Always a pleasure, man.
And you too, Barry Glendinning, for struggling across.
You're welcome.
Paul, couldn't have done it without you.
Thanks, James.
And producer Pete for twiddling those knobs, and you, the listener, for, you know, listening. And we'll be speaking to you on Thursday. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.